Hi, my name is Missy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am very privileged and honored to be speaking here in front of you today. And I'd like to thank the International Committee for inviting me to speak. My sobriety date is April 8th of 2007. I do have a home group. I have a sponsor. She's over there. And she has a sponsor who's right over there. And she has a sponsor who's right over there. So it's great to have them support me today. So the title of the talk is Step 12, Sharing My Experience. And I'm going to read Step 12. If you know it, you're welcome to say it along with me. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So how I do that is by sharing my experience. And luckily, I had a sponsor, Erica, thank you, who shared her experience with me. And that helps me to pass along my experience to someone that I sponsor. But there's other ways that I share my experience in my life. And the three I'm going to focus on today are sponsorship, speaking, and showing up. So for the first, I'm going to start with sponsorship. That has been hard for me. Being a sponsor is tough for me. And the reason is because I've got character defects. And first of all, I think I always need to be able to solve the problems of my sponsees. I think I always need to have the right answer right away. And I try to micromanage them. So what happens is I share, you know, something that is my experience, sometimes in a way that's a little too directive. And then I get frustrated when they don't do it. And I think, hang on a second. I need to give myself a second. Okay. This echo is really throwing me off. So sorry about that. It's probably throwing you off too. But then when my sponsees don't do what I ask, you know, I think, why don't they do what I'm asking them to do? Don't they want to be sober and happy just like me? Like, what's wrong with them? And what I found out is that I want sponsorship to be easy and comfortable, and I feel like if my sponsees do what I tell them to do, then I'll feel better. And I had sponsorship all turned around. I made sponsorship about my ego. I made sponsorship about me feeling okay. And what I know now is that sponsorship is about being helpful to others. One of my big character defects is I think I can control things. And that old thinking that if they just did what I wanted, everything would be fine, is a lie. The truth is, I'm responsible for the effort, not for the outcome. I can give a suggestion to a sponsee, and they can do with it what they want. And that relieves me of having to worry about did they do it, because they get the consequence of either taking the suggestion or not. But I know that at the end, if I've tried to be helpful, then I get to stay sober. And the other thing that was helpful that my sponsor told me was if a sponsee is willing, I can't say anything wrong. But if a sponsee is not willing, I can't say anything right. It has to do with how they hear it. So another one of my character defects is I want people to like me. It's really important for me to feel like people like me. And the problem with that in sponsorship is it's not helpful if I try to sugarcoat something for somebody that I sponsor. What's helpful is for me to tell them the truth about the situation and being clear and direct. And that's where the end of step 12 is really helpful, because my job as a sponsor is simply to help the women that I sponsor create their own relationship with a power greater than themselves. That's what's going to keep them sober and happy. And the way that I can do that is by helping them work the steps and by helping them practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came into AA and my sponsor talked to me about principles, I really had no idea what she meant, but I was afraid to ask her. I always want to think that I know everything, or at least appear that I know everything. And it took me, you know, I was 33 and I thought I should know what principles are. This shouldn't be that hard. But I was afraid to ask. And I did eventually figure out that all that means is things like honesty, integrity, responsibility, respect. Those are things that I can help my sponsees practice. And when I'm coming from a place of principles, it feels less personal to me. And also, it helps me practice those principles, because it's very hard for me to ask somebody I sponsor to do something that I'm not willing to do. And my sponsor told me this when I got sober, and I passed this on to my sponsees, is that I won't ask them to do anything that I haven't done or that I'm not willing to do. Because sharing my experience for me is about sharing what I've actually done, not what I think I should do or what I think should be done, but things I've actually participated in. And the other thing that I've learned is that sponsoring is not about me as a person telling them as a person what to do. It really is about helping them apply the principles of the program. That's what's going to help them create that relationship with a higher power. And, you know, in the end, that's what's going to keep them sober. So I heard something from listening to another alcoholic share their experience that's been helpful too. And it really resonated with me, because she was able to put it into words in a way I couldn't. So anyway, what she said was, when she was drinking, she based her decisions and based her actions on how she felt and what she wanted to do. And I was the same way. If I felt like doing it, I did it. If I didn't feel like doing it, I didn't do it. If I was happy, I acted one way. If I was sad, I acted a different way. And as a result of basing my decisions on my feelings, my actions were erratic. So in AA, I get to practice basing my decisions on principles. And the great thing about that is principles don't change. Honesty is honesty, whether I'm happy, sad, or mad. Being responsible is being responsible, doesn't matter how I feel about it. And so I share that with the women I sponsor too. And I also just tell them directly, if it comes down to me being nice or me being honest, I'm going to be honest. And that is so much more effective, because when my sponsor tells me the truth, even though it might not hit me right away, at some point it does, and it resonates with me, and it builds trust. And I want to give the woman I sponsor the dignity of having that experience too. So I think I'm more effective as a sponsor when I just stick to the principles. And what's happened to me, too, is just in the past few months, my higher power saw fit to gift me with 3 new sponsees. And I think that that might have been a way to give me more experience to share with this talk. So very grateful. Before I came down here, I got to listen to 4 messages from the women I sponsor. And it just helped me get out of myself a little bit. Another way that I get to share my experience is by speaking. The first time I spoke at my home group, I was about a year sober. I'd been in AA for 7 months, and I felt fully unequipped to share anything that I thought would be helpful with anyone. But I did. You know, first of all, I decided these are all the things I think would be helpful that I'm going to share. These are all the things that nobody needs to hear about. And it wasn't that they were... Well, the point is, when I got to the podium, I ended up sharing all the things that I thought were useless and nobody needed to hear about, and I forgot to share everything I had planned. But what happened was, after the meeting, several people came up to me and told me that something I'd said had been helpful, and it was the stuff that I hadn't planned on sharing. So what I think I learned from that is I need to leave room for my higher power. And if I'm speaking from a place of fear and ego, there's no room there. But if I'm speaking from a place of love and service, then I might be open to having my higher power come and share what, because I don't know what might be important to the people that are listening. The other thing I've learned about speaking and sharing is it's important for me to do it even when I'm uncomfortable. And I do not like sharing at meetings. For a talk like this, I got to think about it and think about it. I got to practice it. I got to write like my beginning, middle, and ending. But when I'm in a meeting, I don't get to plan that way. And that's hard for me because of that character defect of control. So what happens is I think of something to share, and then I spend the next 10, 15 minutes deciding how to make it sound good. I'm not listening to what other people are sharing, and by the time I'm ready, my opportunity to share has passed because we're on to something else. So what I'm trying to do now is I pray. If I'm in a meeting that's a sharing meeting, I ask my higher power to let me know if there's something I should say. And then what I found is the clue I get from my higher power that I should share is my heart starts to race. And then I know it's just time for me to say something. I don't need to have it all ready to go. And usually my endings are sort of inelegant and I just say, I'm done. But I've shared from the heart in those situations. And I think that's more helpful to me and more helpful to people out there. Maybe, maybe not. I don't really know. So, let's see. The other thing that's hard for me to share sometimes when I share my story is my story of getting sober is very intertwined with my story of coming out. And that's still uncomfortable for me to share from the podium. But it's a part of my story, and I can't separate the two without leaving out something that's important. And what oftentimes happens then after I get to share in that way is that somebody comes up and says it's helpful. So even though I might not feel comfortable, it's my obligation, I think, to share my experience, whatever that might be. And the most important thing that I can share is hope. Hope that if you think your life isn't going well and drinking has something to do with it, AA can help. If you're sober, if you haven't been drinking and your life isn't going well and maybe mental obsession has something to do with it, we can help. So there's hope here in working the steps and finding a connection with a higher power to keep you sober and happy, to keep me sober and happy. So sponsorship and speaking, those are a couple ways that I can share my experience. And the other way is just, how do I show up? And with people outside of AA, they don't see the work that I'm doing. They don't see the steps that I'm working. They don't see the meetings I'm going to. What they get to see is the result of that work. When I was drinking, I showed up places basically because I just wanted to protect my drinking. If I was there, then I could go home and drink. People didn't really know what was going on with me. So I showed up. I showed up to family events. I showed up to work. I was generally where I needed to be. But when I was at family events, my main goal was to not make eye contact or any contact with anyone. I would just wanted to be there, check that box, and go home. So I would keep myself busy. And maybe on the surface, it might have looked like I was being helpful, working in the kitchen, you know, making sure somebody had what they needed. But what I was trying to do is just head down, distance myself, get in, get out, go home. Now when I show up for my family, my goal is to make eye contact, give people hugs, talk to them about their lives. And what I found is that I belong in my family. I didn't think I belonged in my family. But my family are fun, they're creative, they're a little bit weird, and they're mine. And I get to be there with them now in a different way. The other place that I changed how I show up was at work. The worst of my drinking, I was a first grade teacher. And I showed up really hungover sometimes, but I was there. And that could be very painful in a room of 25 and 6-year-olds. But I did it. I showed up. And work was something to get through to drink. And that's what I did. I got through it to drink. At the end of my teaching career, I decided that teaching was my problem. I put in for a leave of absence, and I decided I was going to be a piano tuner. I told everyone I'm leaving education, you know, to follow my passion of piano tuning, which would have been a disaster because piano tuning classes didn't start till 4 o'clock. There's no way I would have been able to stay sober until 4 o'clock. And that was really the point where my higher power came in and said, nope, enough is enough, you're done. And I got sober at that point. Then I got the chance to show up differently at work. And my last year of teaching, I really feel like I got the chance to make living amends to those kids. I had the hardest student of my career in that last year. And what I was able to show him was love and compassion. And that was exactly what he needed. I wouldn't have been able to do that before. At the end of that year, my higher power gave me the chance to take a different job in my district. And in that capacity, my job is really to be present, to be helpful, and to be of service. I work with teachers now. And so what I've really learned about showing up is there's different ways that I can show up. I can show up and this is something else I got from listening to another alcoholic. He's a past delegate from my area, 36 Southern Minnesota. His name is Denny. And he was sharing about the difference between doing service and being of service. I'm pretty good at doing service. When I do service, I go, I get the job done, and I leave. When I'm being of service, I'm thinking about how can I be helpful and how can I serve. I come at it with a different attitude. And when I'm being of service, I'm present, and I get to grow spiritually. So what do I want? Get the job done and go home, or connect with people and grow spiritually? I get to make that choice depending on how I choose to show up. So sharing my experience by practicing step 12, it helps me to grow a little bit closer towards humility. Sponsorship, speaking, showing up, they've been opportunities for me to see my character defects, work on step 6 and 7, and get more experience by taking the steps and by working with principles, by trying to practice the principles in my life. So I'm going to end with a quote from the Big Book, and it's from the beginning of chapter 7, Working with Others. And it really sums up for me the benefits and what I get out of sharing my experience with others. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Missy. Next is Brooke.
Just in case there was any question. Hi, everybody. My name is Brooke, and I am an alcoholic. Wow, the reverberation is terrible. And if you think it sounds bad, it's not anything compared to what's going on in my head right now. My sobriety date is on or about September 21st, 1984, and my home group is the Keep It Simple group that meets every day in Sheridan, Wyoming. Love to have you come by. Woo! I don't know why they're all here. They have to listen to me all the time. First, I want to say thank you to the committee for asking me to come share. And I'm one of those people that spends a little bit of time studying things. I like looking up words. I like trying to see what AA literature says about things. And a couple of weeks ago, as I was really trying to do some research, I was everything from looking up the word share in the dictionary to experience in the dictionary and how many times it says our in the big book. And I finally got so frustrated that I called my sponsor. And my sponsor read a couple things to me out of the big book that ended with, you may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. So that's my goal, is that you can rely on what I say about myself. And so I need to let you know one thing, and that is I am one brilliant idea away from total disaster. I think I always have been, and I also believe that I always will be. And that brilliant idea has taken innumerable different forms, but the one idea that's most problematic to me is the one that idea that someday I can control and enjoy my drinking. I didn't know that I had that one, but I didn't even know that that's what I was attempting to do, to control my drinking or to enjoy it. It was just really good ideas, like, I don't think I'll drink with those people anymore. I don't think I'll use that combination of stuff anymore. I don't think I'll try to sneak out that door anymore. So there were a whole lot of things that I was trying to do to control and enjoy my drinking. And I am really blessed in that I have family members who have been around Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was about 7 years old. And I got dragged to Alateen meetings, and I went to Al-Anon meetings, and I went to a lot of open AA things and conventions. And part of my thinking was that your guys' sharing all of this stuff was going to help me keep from ever becoming an alcoholic. And I kept trying different methods to control and enjoy that drinking, and things just kind of got worse and worse. And I knew where AA was, and I knew that AA worked because it was keeping family members sober. And one day I showed up. Well, because I tried that too, trying to drink only tequila while working on the Al-Anon fourth step. That didn't seem to work very well. Only drinking before Al-Anon meetings, only drinking after AA meetings. There were a lot of those things that I tried. And then one day, I ended up in a meeting where I said the words, I am Brooke and I'm an alcoholic, and a lot of other things. But I said that, and it felt like a piano fell out of the sky on me, and I absolutely couldn't breathe. Those people that I thought I'd been lying to said, it's about time. And I figured that was good enough, you know. And really what I realized now, what I was looking for, was that I was looking for a little bit of a break before I went back out again. You know, I just needed to rest up a little bit, get some of the people off of my butt, get some of the pain to go away, and listen to some more of that stuff in meetings, and I'd get that knowledge and I'd be all right. And what happened was I got even more miserable. I'm restless, irritable, and discontented until I've got something that immediately gives me that sense of relief. And so I figured what the problem was Cody, Wyoming, where I got sober. And so I took a geographical cure and went to Denver because, after all, nobody can get sober in Wyoming. And I was so miserable. I was going to a lot of meetings. And this is about the time that Alcoholics Anonymous was being hijacked by a lot of outside different things. And so we were hearing a lot of things in meetings that had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was willing to try them because I was that miserable. Somebody said that my inner child was probably, you know, needed to play, and so I would get finger paints, and then I would feel like slitting my wrists. And they'd say, well, if you're physically tired, do something emotional, and if you're emotionally tired, do something physical. And so I would try that, and I would still feel awful. And it got to the point where I was so miserable. I did not want what I had in my sobriety. And I also didn't want to go back to what I was doing before. And I was so desperate that I accidentally asked a big book thumper to be my sponsor. And this is where it gets really exciting. There was a point where my sponsor and I, and my sponsor said, sure, I'll be your sponsor if you're willing to go to any lengths. And I said, okay, I'm willing to go to any lengths. And my sponsor said, I decide what lengths, you do not. And for not the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I lied and said, okay. But this happened to be an alcoholic who was what the big book calls properly armed with the facts about himself. And so we began this journey about me trying to figure out whether or not I was an alcoholic. And see, I was much smarter than that, and I knew I was an alcoholic, so I don't know what the big deal was. Couldn't we hurry and get on with the recovery stuff? Because I already knew I was an alcoholic. Well, it turns out I didn't. And all the different assignments that I was given, I didn't do. But it just so happened at one point I was sitting in the parking lot of my sponsor's house going through the big book because, see, there was going to be a test, and I knew that. I was going to go into my sponsor's, and my sponsor was going to say, what makes you think you're an alcoholic? And I was going to launch out on all of the unfortunate things that happened to me and how embarrassing it was and how shameful I was and how I disappointed people. And that hadn't worked, so it was like I was flipping through the big book, because I hadn't actually read it, but I was flipping through it, trying to find the answer to the test. And I accidentally bumped into this little thing that changed my life forever. And it was that we're without power, that we lost the power of choice. And with about 9 months of sobriety dry, I hit bottom in my parking lot of my sponsor's house. And I was absolutely, I was doomed. And I walked into my sponsors. My sponsor said, what makes you think you're an alcoholic? I said, I've lost the power of choice. I am an alcoholic. I'm going to drink again. I always thought that I had decided not to drink, and then I changed my mind for some really good reason at the time. That's that one brilliant idea away from total disaster. But what I realized that day was that I was always going to change my mind because I was powerless, and nothing I did was going to keep me from doing that. So I wandered into my sponsor's house. It's like, what makes you think you're alcoholic? I'm powerless. And my sponsor did a little jig and said, do you believe, are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourself? And I said, yes, because I had no other choice. I had no other choice. And we got down on our knees and took the third step prayer and then immediately launched into a course of action. It took about 45 minutes to get from the first step to the fourth step. And this is really important to me. Because this is where I found out that I was a real alcoholic. You see, up until that point, I'd been sharing a lot of my experience, but it had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. It had to do with a lot of other things. And I really appreciated hearing about sponsorship, because when I finally got a sponsor who could help me understand what it meant to be an alcoholic, then I was qualified for the solution that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's pretty exciting. So when I was, I said that I'm still one brilliant idea away from total disaster. It's because once I was sober, realized I was an alcoholic, got into some step stuff, I started realizing the different ways that AA could be changed to benefit greater amounts of people. And so I've had a lot of really absurd ideas that could be very dangerous to Alcoholics Anonymous too. So my experience now is that I have found some things that have really helped me, and I would like to share those with you. And we talk about the circle and the triangle. That doesn't belong to us anymore, but we're pretty familiar with it. And that triangle has to do with the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous: recovery, unity, and service. And recovery is 12 steps. Unity is the 12 traditions. Service is the 12 concepts. And for me, it's really helpful to know what the purpose of those things are. The purpose of that recovery legacy is to help me find a solution, because I'm one of those real alcoholics. And that helps me find a solution to alcoholism. The traditions are not, for me, about carrying the message. Carrying the message is step 12. It's one of the things I have to do to stay sober. The traditions are about protecting the message from guess who? People just like me that have brilliant ideas of how we need to change Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this thing, this message, this program saved my life. But it took me a long time before I could see that the traditions would keep AA safe from people just like me, so that it would be around later to save other people's lives. And then maybe that brilliant idea I had already been tried and people got drunk and died over it. So the concepts and that legacy of service is also, for me, not about carrying the message, but about perpetuating the message, which means making it possible for the message to be carried. And the best way that I can explain that has to do with, like, if you're the corrections person for your district, you may never carry the message into the jails, but you are the person that makes it possible for other people to carry it into the jails. You're the one that talks to the jailer, you write up the schedule, you make sure everybody's got their paperwork in, and that service commitment makes it possible for other people to carry the message. And so understanding for me the purpose of those three legacies has been really, really important, especially the part about the unity. Because I have listened an awful lot, and I hear people talk about sponsors, and then every once in a while I hear about a service sponsor. And there's a lot of people that have sponsors. If you don't have one, please go get one. And some people have service sponsors. But I have never heard of a unity sponsor. And that's kind of interesting, because that's the one thing that's going to protect us from us. That is maybe some place where we've got a little bit of work. And when we're... That's what I've left. Oh, my. I am doing some babbling. A couple of things that I wanted to read. When I was thinking about this particular topic, this has to do with Bill. Bill's story, he says, "Never mind the musty past. Here set a miracle directly across the kitchen table." He shouted great tidings. And one other thing that I wanted to read came from Dr. Bob. And he says, "Of far more importance was the fact that he was the first living human," and he's talking about Bill, "with whom I had ever talked who knew what he was talking about in regard to alcoholism from actual experience." In other words, he talked my language. And this is what I started experiencing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I fell in love with. The people who didn't care that I was 17 years old when I got sober, the ones that were like, "Now, you know what, I spilled more alcohol than you ever drank." It's like, well, if you'd hit your mouth sooner, maybe you would have been getting sober sooner. You know, it was like these people was like, "Well, you know, you're just a girl." And you're the, what attracted me, the ones that were like, "Come on, if you have this problem, come on." The things that attracted me were things like my current sponsor, who said to me when I said, "Will you be my sponsor?" said, "You know, I don't sponsor women, and I don't sponsor drug addicts, but I do sponsor alcoholics. And if you're one of those and you want to call me sponsor, then that's what I'll be." That kind of love is an amazing thing, and the only place I've ever experienced that is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it comes from the practice of the traditions. See, I come from sponsorship now that says if you want to learn how to practice these principles in all of your affairs, you will learn how to practice the traditions. I loved what Missy was talking about when she was saying her character defects and trying to get the character defects out of the way when it comes to sponsorship. That's called putting our common welfare first and putting principles before personalities. That kind of stuff is all there in the traditions. And there is the whole story, and there is a solution about, you know, we're like passengers from a great liner the moment after shipwreck. That's the traditions. It's like we don't ask any questions. We don't ask how much money you got. We don't ask you if you're going to do everything we say. We just say, "Come on in. Come on in." And we're going to help you figure out if you're an alcoholic. And I think that that's really important, because I talk about being a real alcoholic. Talking about being a real alcoholic, and it's not because I'm trying to be elitist. The big book talks about the real alcoholic, the alcoholic of our type, the alcoholic of our kind, the hopeless alcoholic, the chronic alcoholic. That's me. For 9 months, I was the other kind of alcoholic. Tradition 3 makes it possible for me to keep coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous until I actually catch alcoholism, which I did. Thankfully, there was a solution there when I got there. But that whole idea of that kind of camaraderie, and I think that we have all felt an awful lot of that. You know, when you're standing on the street corner with 3,000 other members of Alcoholics Anonymous waiting to cross the street, and it's like, yeah, shipwreck, this is a big boat this weekend, isn't it? It's an incredible boat. And the traditions are, you know, if it's like a life raft, what the traditions are talking about is it's just about talking about keeping people like me from taking a piece of glass and starting to try to poke holes in the raft. And I don't mean to do it. I'm not trying to be malicious. I don't want to capsize this. It's just that I'm one brilliant idea away from total disaster. And I was thinking about this yesterday as the anonymity statement was being read during the big meeting and all the flashes were going off while the anonymity statement was being read. It's like, does everybody clearly understand that the anonymity statement means you. So that we're protected from you. And this is really good. Nothing against you. But if that wasn't there, you wouldn't be protected against me. And I think that, again, that what I've learned about the traditions in protecting Alcoholics Anonymous makes it possible for me to carry that message to other alcoholics. And I am so grateful to AA for having a solution to my condition. And I'm so grateful to the people that have gone before who have protected this thing that I really do feel an obligation to do that. Because I think there will come a time, if we don't pay attention to the traditions, where a drunk will walk into our home groups and we won't have a clue what to do with them. We'll be doing feng shui with them and yoga with them, but we won't be able to help them qualify to be an alcoholic and therefore to be able to give them a solution. So there's a whole lot in that. And this is really interesting because this is the first time I haven't had at least a couple of notes. So I just said, God, you just have to tell me what you want me to say. And apparently that was it. So thank you all.
Thank you, Brooke. Next is Jake.
Hi, guys. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jake. Hi, thank you very much for your presentations and this opportunity for who's responsible for me being here, God and the committee. Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor and privilege to participate at the International Convention. I can hear what I say as soon as I say it. So if I don't like the way it sounds coming back, I might just change it. I'm a member of the Three Legacies group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Meets at Monday night. It's a big book, solution-oriented meeting, and it's involved in all three sides of the triangle. I've been sober since November 1st, 1997. I've recovered from alcoholism as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor, and I am a sponsor. And, you know, it's cool. We're sitting there last night. I got a guy staying in my room. He's got 14 months, and he just kept saying, wow, over and over, wow. And he said, I don't come from this. This is foreign to me, all of this. And he said, the love and respect that's taking place this weekend is just blowing me away. And I got to talking about that and thinking about that, and you know that love that we're all sharing here is really the love of God working in and through us all, because none of us come from a place of love and respect. It's the transformation of God in our hearts and in our lives to allow us to flow through and be able to participate in that deal. So when we clap, let's clap for God this weekend, because this is all because of Him, right? I'm a firm believer that Alcoholics Anonymous is not about just not drinking. That Alcoholics Anonymous provides a solution to the alcoholic who can't not stop drinking. And that solution is this power, this set of principles that when taken into my life and worked without reservation or alteration, puts me into that contact, and that power keeps me sober. And that's the way I sponsor, and that's the fellowship I crave, and that's the fellowship I come from. And when I deviate from that personally, I get goofy, and I start having brilliant ideas, right, that are really disastrous. And so I'm a stickler to staying with the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that being said, before any of that could have taken place in my life, there had to be some sort of connection. And I'm a result of a 12-step call. That's why I'm here. An Alcoholics Anonymous, because some man, some alcoholic, who had his life changed as a result of the 12 steps and had that spirit in him, and because it was necessary for his own survival, brought the message to me. And that's what our book says. It says that all of this stuff that's going on, it's all awesome. This convention and everything that we got going on, it's great. But it's not the heartbeat. It's not the core of Alcoholics Anonymous. The core of Alcoholics Anonymous is happening on kitchen tables, in detoxes, at meetings, one-on-one, when one alcoholic sits down with another alcoholic and shares his experience, strength, and hope. That's what grabbed me. I've never had anybody love me like that before. I was a mess when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was an absolute mess. And I hated people, and I wasn't quiet about it. And this man didn't care. I would say all kinds of things to him. And he'd make fun of me and love me anyways. He sat down and he talked to me about what it was like, what it looked like for him to drink, what it looked like for him to stop drinking, and what it looked like for him to get sober. And it won me over. It absolutely won me over. And that's the deal. That is the connection of God. See, we're all examples of that power. I know that God's loving. I know that for a fact because I witness it here in Alcoholics Anonymous, a demonstration of his kids and these principles. One of the things that that this group of men and women thought about Alcoholics Anonymous was that it wasn't a group therapy, that meetings were not group therapy, that they were a place to bring a message of hope. And so that if you're sharing your experience, it ought to be a message of hope, some sort of solution to benefit the next alcoholic to the best of our ability. And they said right off the bat, that's your job. They said, you don't have a solution, but you have us. So your job is to go out there and tell people that you know where there's a solution. Tell other alcoholics that you know that where there's a solution. So I'm about a month, maybe 2 months sober, and I'm out of my mind. And I'm trying to take care of some things, and it's just one of those days where I'm not drinking, and I'm dying. I'm just dying. I got the guilt and depression for no reason. I got an ankle bracelet on. I got to meet with my parole officer again later. I'm angry. I'm depressed, and I can't do it anymore. We get to that spot, that desperate experiment of the first drink. It's right there. And that obsession began to come on me, and I'm walking out of the building. And as I'm walking out, there's a guy walking down the stairs that I happened to see at an outpatient that I was going to. And my sponsor's voice came into me, and he said, "Carry him to the message." So I said, "Hey," and he jumped, you know. I didn't look like this back then. I said, "Are you going to meetings?" And he said, "I go to one a week." So we sit here and we wonder, like, what do I have to offer at 1 month and 2 months and 3 months? And here I am on my way to drink with 2 months, right? And I had enough experience to know that if he's going to stay sober, he needs to go to more than one meeting a week, right? There's other stuff going on here that he's got to partake in. He's not going to make it going to one meeting a week. So I said, "You can't go to one meeting a week. That's ridiculous. You've got to go to at least 15 or 20. And he says, "Well, I don't have a car." I said, "I don't have a car either." I said, "But my sponsor does, and he picks me up every night. Why don't we just have him come pick you up? You do that for me?" And we started talking. I started talking about my sponsor and his guys and all that group and that fellowship and the different meetings we go to. And we talked for 10, 15 minutes. And I found myself carrying on with the affairs of the day. It wasn't until about 3 hours later that I realized that I was on my way to go get drunk. And here I am, carrying on the affairs of my day. Because God intervened right in that minute. And to me, that is the heartbeat. That's the core of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I encourage anybody in this room, I don't care what your experience looks like, you've got something to offer, even if it's just carrying somebody to the message. I'm not checking Facebook, I'm checking notes. The other thing about this idea of carrying the message or 12-step efforts is that I don't know of any responsibility greater you know, I come on Alcoholics Anonymous and I find this God and I get this life as a result of practicing these principles. And to the extent I'm able to practice these principles, the better I feel, the gooder I get, and the more beneficial benefits come to me in this life. And I often hear, or I'm tempted to come up here and tell you what a great life I have, as though that is the result of staying sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you it's not. The result, the deal is I get connected with this power so that I can tell the message of God in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober today to be an effective servant to God. The whole thing is designed for step 12, right? The 12 steps to me are not a neat way to try to manage my defects of character or my emotions. They're designed so that when I'm disconnected and I'm not a being of service, if I'm not available, I mean, I got to ask myself how many people am I sponsoring? And if I'm not throwing myself out there, I need to start. And if I am and it's not becoming effective, I need to look at what's going on. I need to go back to that process of the 12 steps. Because the answer for the drunk is the drunk, right? So if I don't answer the call, we both die. We both die. There was a NRASA, the Northeast Regional Service Assembly of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a mouthful. An AA event. In Jersey this past year, I was at with a bunch of my friends, and I had made friends with a guy from New Jersey locally, and he was walking out of the building, and he said, he saw me, he said, "Do you want to go on a 12-step call?" And I was already, I was hurrying him to his car, like, yeah, let's go on a 12-step call. And we went into this housing project, and it was a bunch of people that barely spoke English, knocking on the door. We go upstairs, and the wife had made the call. We sat down with the wife for a little bit, and then we said, "Can we see him?" And so he brought out, and the first thing he said at us, "I'm not alcoholic." And we said, "Great, we are. Do you mind if we share our experience? Can we tell you about us?" And he said, "I'm not alcoholic." I said, "Well, we tell non-alcoholics about our experience all the time. That's not a problem, right?" And he was adamant, "Not alcoholic." And so all we did was talk about our drinking. We talked about what drinking looks like for us, what it means for us, right? We wouldn't convey information to this man. We conveyed experience. See, and this is the other reason why I think the singleness of purpose, which is going on in the other room, I know, but is so vital. Because I can't sit there and have the same experience. I can't have that connection if it's information. And unless you've been there, unless you know, unless you can talk drunk to the drunk, unless you talk drunk to me, it's information. And most of our drinking careers put us in the situations where there's lots of information being thrown at us, right? Wardens and parole officers and mother-in-laws. It's not until we have that connection, that language of the heart, that identification. Because me and this man talked to this not-alcoholic for less than a half an hour. And I looked over and a tear started rolling down his eye. And he said, "I need help. I need help." We set the hook, as our book calls it, at that point, right? Got him to one of us, got him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, got him a big book, and set him on this journey. Guys, that man's dead if we don't go on that call. If we don't answer that call, he'll die not being alcoholic. So we've got a great responsibility. The question I got to ask is, I share my experience, but to what extent am I willing to do that? What length am I willing to go? The book Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that the occasional kind act, the Good Samaritan once in a while, isn't enough. That I need to play that part every day if need be. And I'm the kind of guy that need be, right? What extent am I willing to go to share my experience? Check Facebook real quick. So I'm a couple years sober, and I'm a hotshot in Alcoholics Anonymous, sponsoring a bunch of people, and I'm at a meeting. And I'm talking at the meeting, and afterwards, somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, do you mind if we stick around for a minute? I wanted to talk to you." And I thought, "Oh, yeah, no problem." Probably was impressed with what I said. I can elaborate for him. I'm humble like that, you know. And everybody cleared out, and he said, "Hey, I was just wondering, do you have a big book on you?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Oh, well, yeah. Why would you bring a big book to an AA meeting?" He said, "I have one." And he took out a book, and he threw it in front of me. And he said, "I just needed help. I couldn't find what you were talking about in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you think you could help me find it?" I was like, "Who are you?" You know, talk about being honest or nice. Nice just went right out the window. And he said, "Let me tell you what it looks like." He said, "I'm a real alcoholic." He said, "Let me tell you what that looks like." He goes, "I drink until I end up a homeless bum in New York City at a boat basin marina. And then I keep drinking some more. See, I don't stop drinking because I'm powerless. I just keep drinking. And then when I sober up, it gets so painful that I go back to drinking no matter what." And he said, "Does that sound like you?" And he nailed it. That's exactly it. And see, the big secret that I had at a couple years sober and a bunch of people around me is I was dying inside. I was dying. And I didn't know why. And I just kept trying to throw myself at this fellowship. And I continued to die. Every day I got sicker and sicker. And I thought, how does he know this stuff? And he said, "Well, buddy, let me tell you something. Unless you find out what's in this book and live it as a way of life, and then present what this book as the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous to others, not only will you die, but you'll kill a lot of people on your way out." And I'm just looking at him like, "You're a nice guy. I mean, what the..." And then he said, "So if you ever want to get, if you ever get a chance, you want to sit down with me and go through this book, let me know." And then he said, "Okay, buddy." And he got real cheerful and patted me on the back, and he collected his big book and off he went, left me his number. And a couple weeks later, I accidentally asked him to sponsor me. And we went through this process. And I discovered something. See, this whole time I thought that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was designed to change alcoholics. And that was a lie. It's not designed to change alcoholics, because the fellowship is a group of people. And I'm beyond human aid. That God changes us through those principles. And I have this fellowship to help me hold accountable to my application of those principles. And so we went through that process, and I got lit up. I lit up. It saved my life again. So the evolution of the message, I think that's part of finding our voice. Some of us are meek and shy. We give up too quick. We say, "I'm not a good speaker. I'm not good at sponsoring. I'm not good at approaching people." But you got to keep at it. Because my experience is that it evolves. It changes and evolves, and we've got to find our voice. What is our voice? What's our approach? See, I sponsor guys, I might be a little bit more aggressive, and I sponsor guys, and I say to them, "You need to say the truth. You don't have to say it like I say it," right? Or maybe my sponsor's more aggressive than me, and he says it aggressively, and I just don't want to say it that aggressive. That's fine, as long as the truth is being said. But I think it's very, very important that we find what the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is, plug ourselves into that, and then present it the way God designed us to present it. Not only is it very important, but my very life as an alcoholic absolutely depends on it. So thank you very much.
Thank you all for sharing. Let's give them another round of applause.